Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Test your skills and test your wits against the incredible one-armed bandit, the fruit machine, the puggy, the three-eyed savings buster. Yes, sirree. You sink your coins, you pull the bar, and dance with Lady Luck. Remember that when you play a slot machine, no strategy is required. The slot machine is controlled by a mathematical algorithm programmed to deliver a set number of wins, a set number of losses. It's just you against the godless predetermined might of the machine. So step right up and take your chances. How about you, sir, right there? Why don't you step on up and try your hand at the one-armed bandit here?
Oh, well, yeah, I say this looks intriguing.
It sure does, sir. Just put your coin in there, pull the bar, and see what Lady Luck has in store for you.
Really, really? Just one coin and I could be rich forever?
That's how it starts. So you just put in one coin and we'll see how the algorithm treats you.
Okay, am I playing it right now?
You're playing it right now, that's right, sir. Just pull the lever. Pull it, yep, there you go. Oh, well, didn't work out for you this time. Do you have some more coins, sir?
Well, I sure do. I don't want to lose out on a chance to get rich.
All right, well, you might want to get a bucket of them, sir, because this algorithm, it's a fickle goddess.
Okay, well, let me go to the ATM.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. This is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
And that was just a little sketch we put together to set the stage for our discussion of slot machines and the science of slot machines, and in fact, the science of gambling behavior.
Yeah, Robert, have you ever played a slot machine?
I have never played an actual slot machine outside of interactions in video games. Not gambling video games, but like legitimate, like Grand Theft Auto, or of course,
okay,
Super Mario Brothers 2.
So you're not betting real cash money on these slot machines?
No, absolutely not.
This is sort of virtual gambling.
Right. Well, especially like Super Mario Brothers 2 comes to mind because if anyone my age may remember, in between each level, you played a little slot device, and it was all about winning extra lives. So if that's the only slot experience you have, it gives you a very skewed idea of what a slot machine is, because you could not lose anything. You could only win extra lives. Uh-huh. And it paid out at a pretty high percentage. It was pretty easy to figure out when to press the button so that you would at least get one extra life.
Oh, but so there's some skill involved in the Super Mario Yes. Brothers 2 slot machine. And that's going to be different than most slot machines in history.
That's right. As we'll discuss, they've evolved into a very nefarious parasitic organism, a mechanical organism, if you will.
I think slot machines are very interesting because in this world of, unmanned planetary rovers, of robotic surgery machines, of all these incredibly science fiction seeming machines that occupy our techno space, the slot machine exists as a really kind of perfect mechanism that stands beyond all of that other technology in that it has a job to do and it does it so well you wouldn't believe it.
Yeah, I mean, the industry has pushed it in this direction to where it just excels at one thing, and that is making money off the gambler for the house.
And ultimately encouraging you to, in gambling industry terms, play to extinction.
Yes.
which is the idea that you put some money in and you keep putting money in until you can no longer put money in because you don't have any more.
Which is a tactic you don't even see all that much in a parasitic organism, because a parasite generally does not want to extinguish the host. The host is its vessel.
Right.
But as we were discussing earlier, there are always more vessels for the slot machine.
Yeah, you can look at the casino as a kind of super parasite because it doesn't have to attach itself to a host and then become dependent on it. It can draw many hosts to itself, and there's always more where they came from.
Yeah, and they will bust them in. They will attract those gamblers in with whatever it takes. And, you know, you instantly think of, buses coming in with them, of travel deals, you know, even like free room and board. I was looking at a 2012 study from Temple University, and they pointed out that an average casino in Atlantic City could expect to make $8.45 off of every dollar they spent on their travel and parking promotions for gamblers. So, again, free bus rides, free parking. $8.45 for every dollar they spend.
Wow.
And so it's a much better deal compared to the $2.51 return on every dollar they spent on room, food, and beverage giveaways. But still,
wait, that's still pretty good.
It's still really good.
So for every dollar they give away in free hotel rooms, free buffet trips, and stuff like that, they get back $2.51 on gambling losses.
Yeah. And so that's just one early stat to just sort of drive home how the system works, how the gambling hyperorganism works.
Well, let's look at the history of the slot machine. I got curious about where this thing came from, and it turns out the term slot machine could originally refer to any coin operated machine, like a vending machine. So it's got a slot where you stick the coin in, it falls in, and you get what you're looking for.
Yeah, slot machine is short for nickel in the slot machine, which is probably the most Grandpa Simpson thing I've ever heard outside of the cartoon. Because it could be anything. It could be gum, cigarettes, etc. You would say, oh, you want another pack of gum? Go over to that nickel in the slot machine and do what comes naturally.
Right. Yeah. And then yell at a cloud. So yeah, in the 20th century, that's sort of when we saw the shift to slot machine referring to a gambling type machine. Though I do think it's interesting to still, in a way, characterize slot machines as vending machines, because you could look at them as a vending machine for thrills.
Mm-hmm.
They're sort of you put the coin in because you're not going to be getting the money back.
Right.
There's almost no chance of winning money at a slot machine.
Yeah, and it has far too many bells and whistles and flashing lights on it to really be an investment machine.
To the
slot machine's in the slot machine's defense, it does seem to position itself as an entertainment device.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in the 1880s, there were some bars and saloons in the United States that had early versions of coin-operated gambling machines. Though I think generally they were not much like the slot machines we think of today. So they might be something like a tiny mechanical horse race. Hmm. And that would give patrons something to bet on and eventually shoot each other about.
So like a basically a little automaton
yeah.
with racing horses that you would You would bet money and maybe life and death over.
Okay. Yeah, that's just one example. But it'd be some kind of electronic, or not electronic, but a mechanical machine that you could use to gamble with. And the patrons might place bets against one another, or sometimes they could like collect payments in the form of things like drinks or tobacco from the saloon operator where the machine was housed.
Yeah, I was reading about this, and it almost seems to harken to a simpler time. It actually reminds me more of like trivia nights you encounter at bars now, where the proprietor paid off winning customers with drinks or cigars or tokens for more refreshments. You know,
yeah,
which is, you know, kind of like you go to these trivia nights, and if you win, oh, you get like, you know, $20 in drinks or something. You know,
yeah, it's to get people in the door.
Yeah.
You know, and in these cases, you weren't always necessarily playing against the machine. In some cases, the machine might be thought of more like a complicated pair of dice.
Okay.
Now, the kind of slot machines we really think of, the reels running through their cycles and then eventually landing to line up, and I'll talk about the specifics there in a minute. Where did that come from? There is apparently some dispute about what exactly counts as the first slot machine or who should be given the title of inventor. But the first major producer of the slot machines of the kind we think of today was a San Francisco mechanic, originally an immigrant from Bavaria, named Charles Fay. And in the 1890s, he invented a series of machines, the first one called the 411-44 machine, then the Card Bell, and then the Liberty Bell, because it's all about freedom. And there are also accounts that Fay essentially ripped off the idea from another inventor named Gustav Schultz, who created a nickel slot machine called Horseshoes in the early 1890s, I think 1893. And from what I can tell, Schultz's machine only had one reel at a time, so he really hadn't tapped into the three-reel magic yet.
I like how it seems like either way, the roots of the slot machine may descend back to Bavarian cuckoo clocks and you know, old German automatons.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And also, I've read some interesting things about the idea of intellectual property in the origins of slot machines, because these early producers and manufacturers of slot machines were ripping each other off all the time. But I mean, what could you do about it? I want to take you to court to sue your patent infringement on my illegal machine.
Oh yeah. So we should probably really describe the slot machine for anyone who's not that familiar with it. I mean, outside, of course, of our Carnival Barker skit at the opening of the episode.
Yeah, we assume you've probably seen one, but just in case you haven't, it looks usually like this, or at least traditionally like this. You've got a big mechanical box in front of you, and it has a coin slot and a lever and a series of reels with images on them, usually three reels, but though that can vary in different machines of today. And they're kind of like the number wheels on a combination lock. You know, they can scroll through, usually vertically scroll through. And when you pull the lever, the reels begin to spin wildly before eventually slowing down and stopping. And the reels are full of images, also referred to as stops. And what you're looking for is which images line up when the reels stop spinning. And they line up across a line that's called the pay line. Typically, of course, you want the three reels on the images to match, though different machines have different payout combination schemes. Sometimes there's one image that pays you something no matter what every time it shows up. And the question is, what are the odds of a match? So assuming the images or stops on all the reels are weighted the same, it actually should be a pretty simple multiplication of probability. So I came up with an example. Let's say you're playing an alien-themed machine. It's a three-reel slot machine modeled after the cast of the movie Alien. So it has eight stops per reel, one for each of the seven crew members of the Nostromo and one for the alien. And the way you'd calculate the probability of hitting a jackpot, of lining up three images on this, would be 1/8, because there are eight stops, times 1/8, times 1/8, three times for the three reels, which leaves you a probability of 1 out of 512. So let's say you get that one chance out of 512, you get three Ripley's or something. If you do, the machine pays out, usually by dumping the coins inside, either all of them or some established subset of them, into a place where you can collect them and then promptly begin putting them back in the machine one at a time.
I love this idea for a slot machine. because it also involves a essentially a parasitic life-destroying organism.
Right.
And a wonderful anthropomorphizing sci-fi analogy.
Oh, the implications of the parasitism did not escape me when I dreamed this up. But yeah, so the mechanical spinning reels on early slot machines did not usually have the cast of Alien in them. They had images like playing suit symbols, so, you know, like playing cards, spade, club, heart, diamond.
The classic iconography of gambling.
Uh-huh. At the time. They also had horseshoes, stars, and bells. I was wondering, where did all the fruit come from?
Yeah, because that even winds
cherries,
up in Mario. Yeah,
cherries, what are they? Sometimes grapes or plums or something, pineapples. Why are these things in the slot machines we think of today? Even I think in the UK, slot machines are often referred to as fruit machines.
Yes, fruit machines.
Well, I read an interesting story about the origin of this. Apparently, because of the moral stigma of gambling in the early days of the early 1900s, there were frequent attempts to ban or eliminate slot machines, and there were lots of sneaky attempts to circumvent this. So companies would come up with a slot machine that wasn't exactly like the other slot machines that came before in some way, trying to find a loophole around the law, or at least around the easy enforcement of the law. And in 1909, a company called the Industry Novelty Company built slot machines, but called them chewing gum dispensers, with the fruit symbols corresponding to flavors of gum that you could win as your payout. Though some of these fruit-dispensing slot machines might also sometimes pay out in coins. The year after that 1909 machine, so in 1910, the Mills Novelty Company added a picture of a chewing gum pack to their machine reels, and apparently this image morphed into the bar symbol that we all know and recognize today on slot machines.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was also reading how the gum machine aspect of the slot machines also allowed the machines to roll back into a more legal form when laws changed. So the San Francisco earthquake of 1906 destroyed most local slot machine manufacturers, and California banned the use of slot machines altogether in 1911. And so to stay in business, the manufacturers revamped the slot machines as gum vending machines. Uh-huh. So it's interesting. They're almost kind of like transformers, shifting in and out of acceptable forms.
Right. So, of course, the original machines were all mechanical. This was before the days of electronics, and they'd have, you know, mechanical systems, gears in place that would try to pay out the correct amounts to keep the probabilities in check. Later, that became easier when you had electromechanical machines, especially, I think, adding electronics eliminated some of the possibility that people could kind of mess with the machines in
tilt
a way.
It, kind to, of like to, a pinball machine.
Right. Mm-hmm. To add an element of skill that isn't supposed to be there. There are stories, I don't know how accurate they are, that back in the old days, if you knew how to pull the lever just right and twist the machine just right, you could ensure a payout. Don't know if that's true, but apparently people thought so, though maybe people think that about the machines of today and they're quite wrong.
Yeah, I was fixing to say that you can easily imagine that in the sort of almost magical thinking that goes into the logical nature of the gambler.
Yeah. And of course, now the machines tend to be fully electronic. So they've got computerized logic, random number generators, and they're perfect now, so they manage payouts always within the correct probability ranges. More widely today, computerized slot machines are a subtype of electronic gaming machines. And what role do they play in the gambling of today? Now, when you think of a casino, chances are, I bet you think of a slot machine.
Yeah, because you think of that, just that big, like that big room that's just filled with them, just a perfect grid of slot machines. And their various human hosts.
Yeah, it's almost like a grocery store aisle. You know, people just line up to.
Now, have you used one of these machines before?
I actually have. I've been to a casino once in Tunica, Mississippi. and I didn't play the machines very much. I mean, I played a very little bit on them. But I observed a lot of people playing the machines. And it's very interesting watching the phenomenon of how people behave, like their posture and their facial expressions while they're using slot machines. I know we're going to talk about this in a bit, that people often report that they understand that the odds are against them on these machines, and they use the machines for enjoyment and entertainment. But when you watch people play them, very often you don't see much excitement or reaction. People very often appear sort of hypnotized. They're locked in the zone. They're not blinking much. Their faces are kind of expressionless, and they're just working the machine.
Yeah, it makes me wonder like what my face looks like when I'm playing a video game.
Yeah, I thought about that too.
But even then, I know that I have at times found myself playing a game where I ask myself, am I enjoying this? Or has this just become a tedious thing that I have to win at in order to call it a day? You know?
Right. You forgot there was a life outside the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I feel like maybe that's the mindset that one can fall into with a slot machine.
Yeah.
Now, I've never actually tried one out, not a real one outside of the video games, but I have seen the rooms, so I know a little bit about what you're talking about here.
Well, maybe this will prevent us from ever getting a good casino sponsorship on this show in the future, but I can attest that they're not really that rewarding.
Hmm. Yeah, and I mean, indeed, when you look at the payback percentage, which again is tied.
I meant emotionally.
Of course,
materially, they're not that rewarding.
Yeah. Because, when you look at the payback percentage, which, again, is determined by an algorithm, you see varying levels of payout. Like some of the sources I was looking at, it was between 70% and 90%.
Yeah, one of the main studies we're going to talk about in this episode cited 70% to 90%. I've seen common percentages more like 80-something percent to 95%. And in the U.S., I at least get the sense that this often seems connected to state regulations. I think some states say your slot machines in the state need to pay between this number and this number.
Yeah, they can only be so evil. but it's important to note that any payback percentage under 100% implies that people who play more at the slot machine lose more money.
Yeah, so if you sat down and just continued putting infinite amounts of money into this machine and never left it, you would always statistically come out behind.
You would play to extinction.
Exactly right. So what role do slot machines play in the larger picture of the gambling economy today? I think it's interesting that according to what I've read, slot machines used to be a sort of entertaining diversion to keep people in your saloon drinking your beverages. Mm-hmm. And then after that, after they were employed in casinos, they seem to have served as a kind of low-stakes alternative to the traditional casino games, you know, the table games like blackjack, craps, and poker. Slot machines don't require any skill. You don't have to study probabilities. You don't have to count cards. You don't have to learn how to bluff. And you don't have as much intimidating personal interaction. Like, you don't have to square off against that scary, ice-cold professionalism of the blackjack dealer. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to worry about the predatory menace of the other poker players who are trying to get your pot.
It's a great gateway. It's like I'm walking in here. I'm a newcomer. I have no idea what gambling consists of. But here's this machine where even if I humiliate myself, it's just between me and the machine.
Yeah, and it's so easy. You just pull a lever or you press a button and you watch the colors settle into place. And it doesn't require a large bet, at least not all at once. It feels safe and cheap to start out, at least. But, of course, now slot machines are huge business.
Yeah, I was reading that it's estimated that slot machines generate over 70% of the average casino's income.
So more than all the table games.
Yeah.
And roulette, blackjack, craps, poker.
Yeah, it's really like an evolution. This thing that started off as just this mere diversion becomes the driving force in casino economy.
Yeah, and I wonder what the explanation for that is. Like, is there just something inherent to the slot machine model that is very alluring? Or is it that slot machines as machines have been improved and improved until they're just the most perfect place to gamble in a casino? Essentially, are slot machines of today more advanced than the blackjack tables of today?
Yeah, I think they are. I mean, because it's so dependent on the technology and the delivery of the user experience. I can't help but think of it in terms of Dune, since I'm rereading Dune right now.
And update to the listeners. I'm almost done with Dune. I've got 50 pages left.
Okay, cool.
I'm probably going to finish it tonight.
Oh, excellent. Well, I can't help but think of this in terms of the whole prohibition against thinking machines in the Dune universe, the Valerian Jihad, where, you know, they wipe out thinking machines, and it seems as much my interpretation of it, it seems as much about like destroying a machine-like way of thinking and using machines to be human. But in that world, you can't have thinking computers anymore. So instead, you have mentats. You have humans that are essentially human computers that can, you know, that can compute know, large numbers and various factors inside their own head.
The blackjack dealer is a mentat.
Yeah, he or she is. And also a mentat is the card counter who walks into the casino and then is asked to leave the casino when it's revealed that they are winning through pure logic and through mental ability. So it's so that's not allowed. The human perfection of thought is not allowed within the casino, but the slot machine is the mechanical, the electronic perfection of thought, and that is, of course, allowed by house rules to do its damage.
Well, you can't count cards at a slot machine.
That's true.
There's no way to beat the machine. And this is something that's going to come up in the research we cite in a bit. People who think they have a way to beat the machine are wrong. Some people might think this way, but they're wrong. You can't beat the machine. It is a mindless, completely unchangeable algorithm. No way of pressing the button. No ritual you can perform or a way you can jiggle the bottom of the machine. Nothing's going to change it.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, real quick, I do want to mention that when it comes to payback on a machine, the idea of the jackpot wasn't invented until 1916. And that's when we had this idea that the machine will spit out all of its coins if you get that very lucky combination.
And of course, multiplying on the idea of the jackpot, you got these modern conceptions of something like the super jackpot.
Right.
Multiple machines are all contributing to this huge number that eventually somebody's going to win. It's kind of like playing the lottery.
Yeah.
It's a small investment and it's maybe not even a medium sized payout. Maybe you could get that gigantic payout that'll set you up for life.
Yeah, and that just plays into the nefarious nature of the machine, right? That you have this almost legendary, mythological payout that's possible by manipulating this one device.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder how high these super jackpots can get.
There was one in 2003, according to my notes, that paid out at nearly $40 million. So,
not bad.
Yeah, and of course, then again, you think of that payout, and that sounds huge. But remember that the machine never really loses. So just imagine how much money it guzzled
right. For
that to be an acceptable payout.
Yeah.
Which also then, of course, adds to the mythology of what kind of a payout the average gambler might expect.
Well, it's just another version of thinking, man, how can this casino afford to give me a free room and a free buffet?
Yeah, because you're paying like triple for it, at least. Yeah.
Well, anyway, we've reached a point in the history of gambling where slot machine play is now considered one of the most addictive forms of gambling. It is powerful. It's insidious. It knows exactly how to work us. We're not playing the slot machines. They're playing us. One great example is that we looked at one study that showed that we're not even aware that we're losing necessarily when we play certain slot machines, right?
That's right. Yeah, there's a 2011 paper titled Losses Disguised as Wins in Modern Multi-Line Video Slot Machines, and this was published in the journal Addiction. And so the main nut of this is that, so you're a novice player, you walk in, you check out one of these slot machines, and there are all these bells and whistles and lights and cartoon characters and pharaohs, you know, what have you, just flashing at you. And it's giving you, a sense of emotional arousal when you win.
Yeah.
But it's also giving you a sense of emotional arousal even when you're losing money, because for instance, let's say you put in, I probably have the amounts here wrong, but let's say you put in 50 cents into the machine, right?
Uh-huh.
And then, whoa, celebration, lights are flashing, horns are blaring because you just won 25 cents.
Yeah.
You actually lost money, but the machine is celebrating it and giving you an emotional arousal based on your loss. So it's disguising your loss as a win, and then you keep going because now you're just more invested.
So you have these machines that allow you to make five bets at the same time, and say you win on one of them and it pays back double. You're still behind. You're still losing, but you won something.
Yeah.
You're doing pretty good, you know?
Yeah. So you just put some more coins in.
But another type of study I wanted to talk about, and this will actually refer to some older studies that I think are sort of foundational in the history of gambling studies, is about the irrationality of gambling. What's going on in the mind of the gambler? So here's the situation. Unless you are incredibly skilled at a perhaps certain type of game where your skills give you an edge over the odds, this might be something like poker where you're playing against other players, not necessarily against mm-hmm. the house where the odds are set against you. Though even in this case, this is going to be somewhat debatable. You probably think you're a better poker player than you actually are.
Yeah, you're probably not really the Mintat threat that you think you are to
you are
the
not,
house.
You are not the Thufir Hawat of poker.
Yeah.
Walking into a casino is almost never a good investment unless you're just planning to scam a free buffet and not play any games.
Mm-hmm.
there's a reason casinos make money. As we've said, the odds are always against you. The long-term probabilities always favor the house. But slot machines are a really, really especially unlikely way to get a payoff. And furthermore, this should not be news to anybody because everybody knows the odds are against them.
Yeah, it's not a secret that that slot machines are a poor use of your time and money.
Yeah, yeah. And so if your goal as a gambler is to, let's say, knowingly spend a little money just to have an experience, you know, maybe to feel the thrill of a risk and chase the ghost of a win, mm-hmm. that might make some sense. But if your goal is to make money, and for many slot machine players and gamblers in general, this does seem to be the goal, you are acting irrationally. There's not a different perspective about it. The odds are against you. It's a mathematical truth that you are being irrational and you're going to lose. So what does the thinking of a slot machine player look like who's in this situation? Historically, studies have looked into this, but it's kind of a difficult problem because how do you judge what's going on in a gambler's head while he or she is gambling? This is especially difficult because you can't necessarily expect people to reflectively self-report their attitudes and thought processes accurately. You know, if you ask people after a gambling session, you know, did you expect to win? They might be rationalizing losses by saying, no, I know it's just for entertainment. Or they might not even realize what cognitive processes are governing their behavior while they're sitting at the machine.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost kind of like if you were to quiz somebody about their late night browser history, you know, in the light of the waking day, you know, because they're going to be a little removed from who they were when they were browsing those particular sites. There's kind of a depressurization to various experiences in life where you kind of let yourself become seduced by, say, the lights and the environment of the casino and being the gambler as opposed to the individual who's just, you know, quizzed about his or her gambling on the street the next day. And that's not even factoring in any feelings of shame or regret you might have.
Sure. And I mean, yeah, I think it's worth thinking about is really being in another state of mind. I mean, can you always remember exactly how you were thinking when you were on drugs?
Yeah.
There have been several studies that used a method that tried to get at the thinking, the cognition of people who were in the act of gambling by using a method we might call the speaking aloud approach. And one often cited study of this kind is from 1992, and it's called Irrational Thinking Among Slot Machine Players from the Journal of Gambling Studies by Michael B. Walker of the University of Sydney. So this is an older study, but I think the results are still interesting and worth talking about because it's often cited in the field. So the experiment was researchers recruited 27 university students who regularly played one of three types of electronic games. So you had people who played slot machines, you had people who played video poker, they called video draw poker, and then they played, another group played what they called video amusement games, which from what I could tell, I think just meant video games,
okay,
like arcade games, without a gambling component.
Okay. That makes sense because, yeah, we keep thinking about, like, slot machines versus video games, so it makes sense that would be the comparison.
Yeah, and so the participants broke down as 9 slot machine players, 8 video poker players, and 9 video amusement players, assuming that just means, like, arcade game players. And all the players played each of the 3 types of games for 20 or 30 minutes, starting with their preferred game for 30 minutes. So slot machine player played slot machines for 30 minutes and then went on to play the other types of games for 30 or 20 minutes. And they were instructed to explain their thoughts out loud to a microphone tape recorder while they were playing. The exact instructions were, and I quote, "We want to know how you're playing the game. We want you to talk all the time so we know what you are thinking about while you are playing the game. When you're ready, we will begin recording." So they recorded them talking while they were gambling or playing the video game. And then afterwards, they listened to these recordings and they categorized all the statements the people made into 5 different types. One was descriptive. So this is the player just describing what's happening.
Okay.
One is rational, and this is a statement of strategy that is correct or optimal with respect to winning in relation to the structure of the game. That's how they described it. The other one would be irrational. So this is a statement of strategy that is incorrect or is or it's an attempt to influence the outcome of the game in a way that won't actually work, the way that they said is inappropriate. The other is emotional. That's just expressing feelings. And then they had a category for other, like nonverbal vocalizations for, I guess, when you just say like, ugh!
So irrational, an example of that would be like if I were to say, all right, it's gotta pay out. It's gotta pay out. Like next time, I've just lost so much. I've gotta win the next one.
Yeah, that'd be a great example. Another example of irrational thinking was, anthropomorphizing or personalizing the machine. So saying things like, come on, baby, or come to mama, or you owe me, or you pay me and I'll pay you. Those were all quoted in the study.
You pay me. I'm going to reset the terms of our relationship.
The bargain. Yeah, exactly.
You can't bargain with the machine.
Let me reprogram you with my mind. So once the statements were categorized, the results indicated that the highest rate of irrational statements were produced by slot players playing slot machines, and the lowest were amusement gamers playing their video games.
Huh.
So people were much more likely to produce irrational statements if they were regular slot machine players playing slot machines currently.
Interesting. Like I'm thinking back on video game playing that I've done in the past, and I can definitely remember times where it stops being fun and it begins to be just about like beating the level and even, applying some level of irrational and emotional thought to it, mm-hmm. you know, and anthropomorphizing the game in ways that go beyond merely getting into character or story.
Yeah. Though much more often the people playing regular video games were making rational statements about mm-hmm. strategy. They're saying like, oh, I think I need to jump on that thing or, you know, it's something that's actually rational with respect to what's happening in the game.
Gotcha.
And I'm just going to read a quote about their results. So they said, out of all the statements made by slot machine players when playing slot machines, 38% were categorized as irrational. Furthermore, 80% of strategic statements made by slot machine players while playing slot machines were categorized as irrational. Though I think one interesting qualification of this is, what rational statements about strategy could you make while playing a slot machine?
Yeah, because
I mean,
you can
make a few. I mean, I guess you can just say, I guess I'll play double bets this time, as long as you're not indicating that you think you are controlling outcomes when you're not or something like that. But
yeah, and so many of those irrational statements are going to play directly into the mythology of the slot machine.
Right.
You know, where the mythology of the slot machine is that if you double down and you keep playing, that it's going to pay off.
Yeah. And so another study published in 2000 in the Journal of Psychology was called Predictors of Irrational Thinking in Regular Slot Machine Players. And it followed up on these results, testing more slot machine gamblers with that same talk aloud method. Though I think it's worth mentioning at this point that both of these studies called out the potential limitations of the talk aloud method. Like the requirement to talk aloud about a game, since it's an unnatural activity, could be skewing results or subjective attitudes in the participants. You always want to be careful about these kind of things, that you might be getting incorrect feedback because of the test conditions.
Mm-hmm.
But at least with that qualification in mind, this study was generally consistent with the previous findings, and they showed that strategic statements made about slot machine gaming were very often irrational. 14% of all statements made were irrational, and 75% of all game-related or strategic verbalizations were irrational. And then I thought this was really interesting. They offered different categories of irrational statements and showed what percentage of irrational statements they made up. So one category they had was like superstitious rituals, hypotheses, or predictions.
So this would be like, I got to rub my rabbit's foot, or I need to lift the machine before I play it.
That's right. Sort of these are all just false strategies of thinking you can influence the outcomes of the machine, or predictions based on things that had no validity. So like the gambler's fallacy, I think, would be part of this.
Yeah.
Like, oh, if I've just lost a bunch of times in a row, I'm due.
Yeah.
And this was 59% of all irrational statements. So this is a lot of them. Another one that I thought was really interesting was the category called inappropriate rationalization of near misses. The way they explained this was, they said, these statements classified as irrational implied the player believed the machine was cheating or stopping them from winning by not providing all the winning symbols.
And that's interesting, like, because it kind of gets to the heart of it, but it's like the machine, yes, the machine is cheating you, but it's cheating you in a very systematic way, not in this clumsy way that you're attributing.
Right, exactly. So they're calling out capricious cheating when actually it's very methodical cheating.
Yeah.
The other big category was personification of the machine. This is 24% of all irrational statements. And this is what it sounds like. It's any statement where the player is trying to make a bargain with the machine or attribute thoughts or emotions to it, or sometimes like yelling insults at the machine. These were also classified as irrational. And then the other 12% were statements that were belief in personal luck.
Ah, yes.
Though a thing I thought was interesting was they said they didn't find any references to personal skill. So at least the gamblers weren't saying things that suggested that they thought skill was involved in the playing of slot machines.
Yeah, it's almost more like a religious act. Like the slot machine becomes this this metaphor for our interaction with the world and with our life.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a good way of putting it. There are hidden forces at work.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were looking for correlated predictors of irrationality in this study. They're like, okay, are there other conditions that if these hold, you're more likely to see irrational behavior sitting in front of the slot machine? And so one thing they looked for and did not find is a correlation between the percentage of wins and irrationality. So it doesn't matter how much you win. That doesn't change how irrational you are. They did find a correlation between risk-taking and irrationality. The players who bet more at a time and took higher risks generated more irrational statements in general, though not necessarily when analyzed specifically with regard to strategic statements, just the general statements. But from both of these studies, there's an ongoing tension between the fact that slot machine gamblers often seem to display irrational behaviors while they're in the act. So you're sitting there in front of the slot machine gambling and you're being irrational. But then when you're not in the act of playing, you report rational attitudes toward the activity. So after you get out of the casino and you're giving a survey, you know, you're answering questions about the act of gambling, you will say things that indicate you realize it's pure chance, you're likely to lose, you're not likely to win money, you have no way of influencing the machine. I don't know. I think that's interesting, like the disconnect between our cognition while we're playing and our cognition when we're not playing.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like you're ensorcelled, right? It's like talking to the sailor who gets dragged into the water by the siren every day. And on the shore, he's like, yeah, I know that she's part fish and that she's basically just hypnotizing me and trying to drag me to a watery death. I know all that stuff. And, why do we have to drag you out of the water every day? Why does she continue to control you so?
Yeah, there was an interesting paper that I just looked at briefly from 2010 that referred to exactly this disconnect, this going back and forth between modes of cognition, and referred to it as double switching.
Hmm.
But that's, of course, just looking at the mind of the gambler. Another element that very much comes into gambling is looking at not necessarily the mind, but the perceived mind of the machine.
Yes, this is really interesting. And there's a 2015 study that just came out from the University of Milano Bicocca from researchers Paolo Riva, Simona Sacchi, and Marco Brambilla. And there's actually a great quote in here that invokes another mythological creature. They say, "It is possible that, similar to how in ancient mythology, challengers perceive the Sphinx as possessing a human-like mind and intelligence, the gambling industry is selling customers a challenge against a mind rather than just a machine or a computer algorithm."
So it's the best of both worlds. It's like you get to combine the safety and low stakes and kind of comfort zone aspects of the slot machine with the thrill of playing against another player in poker.
Right. Yeah, it's so we've mentioned personifying the machine already. So this paper is not the first to discuss anthropomorphization and slot machine gambling.
No, like I said, in those earlier papers, they found personifying the machine was very common.
Yeah, but this is the first to really look at how anthropomorphism plays into the excitement engagement level and how it affects how much money you end up losing in the venture.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
I'm Elia Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed, and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's gonna catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Yeah, I know I've seen, especially based on some of the stuff you dug up, that past designs of slot machines have very much tried to suggest humanity in just the look and feel of the machine.
Yeah, the paper mentioned, oh yeah, you'll see these slot machines and they'll have pharaohs and women and muscle men on them, and that's all well and good. But I was not expected to find what I found when I was looking in Getty Images. A 1952, I believe, image of a blonde bombshell, which is essentially, imagine a kind of a Marilyn Monroe looking pinup mannequin. And then there's just a slot machine that they slide into her torso. And she's just standing.
It's horrifying.
Yeah. She's just standing in I believe it was a Death Valley, California, bar or gas station or something.
Now, is this a sexualized figure of a woman that just happens to have a lever poking out of it? Or is the lever like her arm or something?
Oh, no. It's just a lever. It's like, it's, it, it, like it's almost as if you were to take like a corpse and just like slab a gambling machine in the middle. You know, it's just it's not an artful convergence of the female form and the gambling machine. It's very rough and heavy-handed, and yet seems to call out to you and say, "Hey, play this gambling machine, woman."
Yeah. Let us transparently manipulate your brain.
Yeah. You know, also, I noticed on one of the sites we were looking at that had a lot of, like, retro slot machine collectibles, the guy there was selling a bandit head from a one-armed bandit.
What? Yeah. A bandit head?
Yeah, you could buy it for $150 on eBay. But
it's explicitly claiming to rob you.
Yeah, it's the one-armed bandit, so let's just go ahead and put this this head on top, like a papier-mâché head with a cowboy hat, and then you can go duel with it, yeah. But the thing is, the thing about anthropomorphization and anthropomorphism in general is that it permeates everything we do, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's paradoxical at times. Like, it's the force that makes it easier to kick a garbage can because you think it's a person,
yeah.
You know, like you make that garbage can, you personify it as somebody you're mad at and you kick it. But also if you draw a face on a garbage can, it makes it a little harder to kick the garbage can because you've given it some sort of like innocent personhood.
Oh, I mean, I bet you treat your computer like a person sometimes. You don't really think it has a mind and emotions, but sometimes it feels that way when it's slow, when it's lagging, when it's causing you problems. This person is messing up your day. They are so annoying.
Yeah. I mean, and it's also, of course, a huge part, if not the key part of our religious thinking and our religious worldviews, where we attribute consciousness to the universe. We anthropomorphize the universe.
Yeah, yeah.
Either in the form of a single deity or in an array of deities representing various personified aspects of reality.
Well, I think that's something that complicates this view of looking at slot machines as agents or as people. Again, nobody really thinks the slot machine is a person.
Right.
But they can start thinking in those ways. And then there's also a complicated interplay between the ghost of the person you imagine is in the slot machine and this sort of larger universal ghost, you know, Lady Luck, the mind of the universe that's handing out wins and losses. And to what extent is that the machine itself, or is that this third external force that's watching over the both of you?
Yeah, indeed. So the researchers in this 2015 study, this is what they did. They did four experiments in total, but the first three were with a small study, so like a very small sample size, really a quasi study.
Mm-hmm.
Participants were a group of 15 regular slot machine players and a group of 15 non-regular slot machine players. And then what they did is they primed the individuals before they interacted with these machines. So all the anthropomorphization that's taking place here, it doesn't involve any physical anthropomorphization. There are no heads, there are no mannequins. It's all about priming them with a description.
Yeah, they're just given text.
Yeah.
But the text actually proved pretty interesting in how it affected the way they thought about the game and their relationship with the machine. I think we should actually read out the text because I think the differences are interesting.
Okay. This is the anthropomorphizing priming text from study one. Remember that when you play with a slot machine, you don't need to implement any particular strategy. Indeed, the slot machine can decide whether you will win or lose a series of bets anytime she wants. Sometimes she may choose to make fun of you, leaving you empty-handed for several bets. Other times, she might want to reward you with a win. In any case, the slot machine will always choose what will happen. You just have to start playing and see what happens.
So some people got that one. Other people got, remember that when you play a slot machine, you don't need to implement any particular strategy. Instead, the slot machine is controlled by a mathematical algorithm that is programmed to deliver a certain overall number of wins and losses. Based on this algorithm, you can win or lose a series of bets. In any case, the outcome of each turn of the reels is always run by a computer algorithm. You just have to start playing and see what happens.
So both are saying essentially the same thing.
Yeah.
Like there's a force here that's already in play, and you cannot win against it.
But in one case, it's she, and in the other case, it's it.
Yeah, they found that an anthropomorphized description of the slot machine increased gambling behavior and reduced winnings. And winnings, of course, decreased because the gamblers were gambling more on the anthropomorphized machines.
Another moral about gambling. The longer you play, the more you'll lose.
Yeah, and that's all it takes. Just get the individual playing more, and they will lose more.
Playing to extinction.
Yeah. So the first study they did was more about just the time you invested in it.
Yeah,
it wasn't, there weren't any stakes.
Money. Yeah,
yeah. The second study, that one involved real money or points, and study three tested the emotional experience of the game. Okay. Study three provided initial evidence of a link between anthropomorphism of slot machines with the participants' emotional experience and their actual gambling behavior, but specifically found that slot machine anthropomorphism increases the experience of positive emotions, which leads people to gamble more. Now, the fourth study, this is where they took what they learned from the first three and they applied it to a much larger group, this time 200 individuals. And they used candies instead of money or points or anything. So this is a key, though. Unlike study three, study four did not provide support for their hypothesis that priming participants with an anthropomorphic slot machine intrinsically results in a stronger emotional reaction, except for low arousal, negative emotions such as fatigue.
Yeah, so, I'm tired.
Yeah. So, and the researchers aren't exactly sure why they weren't able to repeat the same effect in study four that they found
about,
in study three.
About the emotions, specifically.
Right, about the emotion. They think that might be because of different measures they were using between three and four, so more study is required there.
But the anthropomorphization, the personification of the slot machine, definitely did affect playing, like the length of playtime and the losses as a result of the length of playtime.
Yes. Yeah, and that's one of the key take homes here. You know, along with just some of the key points that came out of the paper, that people exposed to a humanized slot machine lost more points compared to people exposed to non-humanized slot machines.
Yeah.
That anthropomorphization resulted in greater loss of slot machine payouts. That people primed with a humanized slot machine lost more slot machine payouts because they went on playing longer. And the theory is that it's all about emotional arousal, which increases focus and engagement, forcing gamblers to gamble more.
That was the interpretation
right.
that they applied to their emotional results, though there was, like you said, there was some discrepancy in the emotional results.
Yeah. And then the final like take-home from this study is that the other side of the coin is that just as you can potentially prime somebody with anthropomorphizing text and make them gamble more, that this might be a way to treat gambling behavior.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So if you're trying to discourage people from spending their life savings on a slot machine, it perhaps could help or at least mitigate the effects just to constantly remind people that it's a machine working by an algorithm.
Yeah, like
– of course, the casinos don't want to do that.
Yeah.
They want you to play to extinction, but – I don't know. I think the idea is maybe that a law could require casinos to, I don't know, emphasize the impersonality of slot machines.
Yeah, like imagine, I think of the legislation that takes place around cigarettes and tobacco, right?
Yeah.
You often, you know, it's about like, let's make it less sexy, make it less appealing, put a big scary warning on it, I mean, realistic warning on it about the ill effects.
Yeah.
Like what if that was applied to a slot machine where you cannot anthropomorphize it? It has to be less flashy, and there has to be a big plate on the front of it that tells you this is all about the algorithm, and you are not
yeah.
going to win.
Surgeon General's warning, there is no fickle god or goddess inside this machine.
Right.
One of the other interesting things about the study, though, was that it only looked at verbal priming, like we said. So people were either given a verbal description saying it's just an algorithm or a verbal description saying, she wants to reward you sometimes. She takes your money the other times. It would be interesting to see the results of visual priming along these lines, like a machine that just looks like a flat blank machine or a machine that's like our Marilyn Monroe machine. It's very much dressed up to look like a human and given expressive visual emotions.
Yeah, or I was looking at some YouTube clips of just various slots. And a lot of them have, like one I was looking at, like it wasn't just fruit and symbols rolling by, but also like a barbarian woman with a panther, you know? So like what if,
what?
Yeah, like she's, like the top half of her, like ends up syncing up with the bottom half. So it's essentially
okay.
like a bikini woman is one of the icons on the slots.
Okay.
Yeah.
Another interesting finding I thought was that they pointed out in their discussion section that while they were able to get in all cases anthropomorphic thinking elevated by priming people with this pro anthropomorphization text, anthropomorphization was present in both groups.
Yeah.
So even the people who were given the text that says it's just an algorithm, it's just a machine, still showed some anthropomorphic thinking. They still attributed some beliefs and feelings and thoughts to the machine, less than the other group, but there were still some there. And that suggests that there's an inherent tendency to personalize the machine, even when you're discouraged from doing so.
Yeah, all the machines are doing when they throw on a head or any colorful imagery is they're just encouraging the pre-existing tendency.
You know, the idea about these different ways of viewing the machine makes me think of something I've read about in the philosopher Daniel Dennett's writings before, where mm-hmm. he talks about the idea of the three major stances that we take in reference to external objects, which are the physical stance, the design stance, and the intentional stance. And it's a way of understanding and predicting what third-party objects are going to do. And so if you, say, see rocks rolling down a hill, you tend to think of this in what he would call the physical stance. It's right. it's just acting by physics, and you can pretty much predict that they're going to keep rolling downhill. When you look at an organism or an object or something, you can think about it in terms of the design stance. So like an alarm clock is designed to act a certain way, or an organism is designed by evolution to achieve a certain purpose. And you can think about it in those terms because they have goals in mind, and mm-hmm. it sort of simplifies the factors we need to take into consideration when predicting behavior. And then the third stance is the intentional stance. That's how we think about agents. So it'd be like a person or a thinking animal. It has things it wants to do. And I think the idea is that you can apply all three stances to something like a slot machine. Like, it is governed by underlying physics, and if you wanted to get really detailed, you could look at the physics of all the electronics inside and how they determine what the machine does. You could look at it in the design stance, whereas it was made by a person who...
To eat your money.
Yeah. To eat your money, and it does that very well. Or you could look at it from the intentional stance, and you could say it is an agent that wants to sometimes reward you with happy money times, and other times it will punish you for your hubris.
What I love about this is that both the physical and the intention model are wrong here. Like, only the design view is the one that actually gives you a realistic idea of what this machine is going to do to you.
Well, I think you could say that the physical stance is not necessarily wrong. It's just unnecessary. Like, there's no reason you would need to look at the physics of what every electron inside the machine is doing mm-hmm. to understand it.
Yeah, but I think the physical doesn't give you a clear mind of like what it's going to do to you.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
The design is
it doesn't give you the teleology of the slot machine.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's interesting.
Yeah. So the idea here is that we can be primed to regard a slot machine within the intentional stance. But ideally, if you want to have people not spending so much money on slot machines, you want to remind them to think about it through the design stance. The design stance is such a mood killer for mm-hmm. slot machines. You know, whenever you're made to think about what the slot machine is designed to do, it kills the magic.
Yeah. Yeah, you see through the facade to the nefarious purpose.
Yeah, another thing the anthropomorphization makes me think about is the future of electronic gambling, especially when combined with future generations of artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what happens when the slot machine is not just engaging in passive anthropomorphization, but also active personification, to where it's talking back to you, it's engaging with you, it's essentially a chatterbox, trying to get you to gamble more through conversation.
Yeah, I mean, imagine the perfect AI chatterbot, slot machine of 2050 or whatever. It's the Lady Luck slot machine, and she chats oh so charmingly mm-hmm. while she takes your coins one at a time. Or these days, I don't know if it's often even coins. I think you get in the casinos of today, you might get like a card that has a certain amount of credits on it, and it slowly deducts just little bits at a time.
Ah, little bits at a time. Well, there you have it. Slot machines, the design, the purpose, a little bit of the history, and of course our scientific exploration of slot machine usage and gambling behavior. from a psychological standpoint. So, we would love to hear from any and all of you on this. I know there are individuals out there that listen to the show who have history with slot machines. Some of you may even have have past problems with gambling addiction, and therefore have some feedback you want to give us, some personal accounts you want to share with us. And if you want us to share it without using your real name, just leave a note to that effect, and we will honor it. You can find us at stufftoblowyourmind.com. That is the mothership. That's where you'll find all the episodes, podcasts, videos, blog posts, you name it, as well as links out to our social media accounts, such as Tumblr, Facebook, and Twitter. We are Blow the Mind on all of those.
And if you want to get in touch with us with any of those stories Robert mentioned or any other feedback about the idea of electronic gambling slot machines and how our brains work, you can email us at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.